BSing with.
Who?
BSing with.
What?
BSing with Sean K. BSing with.
Who?
BSing with.
What?
BSing with Sean K. BSing with.
Who?
Hello and welcome to another episode of BSing with Sean K. I'm your host, Sean Neese. On this show, I have long-form interviews with people who are living outside the box and pursuing their creative and intellectual passions. Writers, comedians, bloggers, artists, musicians, or people with perspectives that aren't often heard in the mainstream media. And this is episode 89. And for this episode, I'm going to play you a conversation I had with Tom Bacalus, who I've known a while. I met him, I think it was about, over 10 years ago, I first met him at County College of Morris. That's where I first went after I finished high school. And he was, at the time, he was in a band called Four Fingers, which was around for a while. I think the last show I went to with Four Fingers, which is like old school punk kind of music, very punk influenced kind of music. It was, I think the last show I went with them, where they played was like a few years ago. So they were around a while, and he was also in Permanent Tension and some other bands, but now his main focus is poetry. He's writing, he has a book out called Orphan Road, which is a collection of his poems. At the time when I met Tom, I was involved in music too, and I was doing a grindcore band, Nemesis Complex, and then I also did a band, Holy the Bastards, with Chris Flynn, who was in his band Four Fingers, and also Permanent Tension as well. And we talked a lot about how he broke away from music and got more into writing spoken word poetry, and what his experience has been like publishing a book and also performing in open mics and poetry readings. And yes, he was in the band with Chris Flynn, and I interviewed Pat Flynn for episode 68. I interviewed Chris's brother, Pat Flynn, for episode 68, and Pat is in a band, Spanish Dracula, now with his brother Chris. And Tom mentions Chris in the interview, just so people know who he's talking about that aren't familiar with his music already. And yeah, it was a good conversation. And actually, this podcast episode inspired me, because like, I've been writing my own spoken, I performed spoken word at open mics in the past, mainly at the Stark Reality open mic, and I did a podcast episode related to that on episode 57. It was, I also interviewed Iman Ramawi, who I met at that open mic. That was for episode 61. But yeah, I've been getting into writing more spoken word poetry myself, because I also write music, but it's been hard getting a band together, and spoken word and poetry is a way I can kind of use that creative energy and have a creative outlet without having to rely on having a band. And, you know, I enjoy writing lyrics and songs, and with spoken word, I can kind of, I feel like some of the things I say in those, like, sometimes I use my lyrics as spoken word too. And I feel like sometimes when I say lyrics in a spoken word form, it can connect with people who might not necessarily be into the style of music I play. So it has more of a universal thing to it. And I started writing more after this interview, because it really got me into, you know, just the fact that he published his book and everything. It really inspired me to, you know, because I've always enjoyed writing, and I've always had a talent like for creative writing, and I've been wanting to do something more with that. So I'm thinking about possibly putting a book together with a a lot of the writings I've been doing too. And I'll read something I've written recently at the end. He also reads some of his poetry in the interview. And anyway, that's how I know him, through CCM and the music scene and everything. And anyway, without further delay, here's the conversation, and I hope you enjoy. Alrighty then, so this is BSing with Sean Kay and Tom Bacalus.
Hello.
And I've known Tom a while. When I first met you, you were in a punk band called Four Fingers.
That's correct.
And that lasted a while, actually. Yeah, I think your last show was like a couple years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now you gravitated towards writing.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's correct.
And I guess you kind of bring that punk spirit to your writing, right? Like, absolutely, that kind of very straightforward. So maybe just talk a bit about how your journey to that.
Sure. You know, kind of like with everything, as we get older, things start to hurt. Things start to kind of fall apart a little bit. So I saw writing poetry specifically as an outlet away from the bands. It was a way for me to continue doing what I was still doing. I just didn't have to focus on a guitar, a bass guitar, a drummer. Just, I didn't have to get other people in the room. It was just me and the fucking pad of paper or the computer or my phone, and that's just really how it started.
Nice. So it's kind of like a progression of what you were doing with your lyrics, I guess, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It's a little bit different because each band, like with Four Fingers, the lyrics were silly in the beginning, and then we definitely became a little bit more serious, like writing about, you know, depression or being fucking despondent or whatever. And then the last band I was in, Permanent Tension, it was kind of like this screamo, thrash, power violence kind of mathcore band. And those lyrics really opened the floodgates for the poetry. I was like, wow, like, if I can write this type of stuff in this type of band, maybe I could do it without a band. And that's really where it's taken me.
Is there more of a freedom with that? Like, not being restricted to the music?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I just have to rely on myself or, you know, a publisher to put it out. Like, I don't believe... I like submitting my poetry. I like getting rejections or acceptances and... You know, I've published a lot in 2 years, something like over 150 poems. So I don't know where it's coming from. It just keeps coming out, you know.
Yeah. Was it? Were you afraid submitting your writing at first, like about rejection?
I don't think I was afraid of the rejections, but I was definitely afraid of kind of the idea of it's just me. You know, there's no. Like, for example, like when I sang in bands, I never faced the crowd. I was always afraid of the crowd. And I would face the drummer, most likely Chris Flynn, because he's the only guy who could put up with me in a fucking band. So I would face him and yell the words at him. But now, like with poetry, it's just, it's me. And if I do a reading, I have to face people. So it's very overwhelming, I guess would be the word.
Yeah, it's much more, because they'll focus all on you, like...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, have you done, what was it like doing, like, your first open mic? Have you done open mics?
I have done open mics. Completely anxiety-ridden, I drank so much beer, and I practiced reading all the poems in an alley down the road before I was set to read, just to kind of, like, steady the nerves. But... once I did it, it just kind of, like, came more naturally, you know?
And, like, were there people, like, in the audience that said they connected with certain pieces?
Or... absolutely. Yeah. And that blew my mind, because a lot of it is people reading about, you know, failed relationships or smash the patriarchy or eating disorders and things like that, and I'm just writing about... like a guy I worked with who knew this other guy who hung himself in the same room I slept in at the hospital I worked in, you know? Just, I try to see the light side of the dark side of life.
Like more anecdotal kind of, yeah.
Anecdotal and kind of like, yeah, definitely yeah. Anecdotal.
Good that's work, that's good what work. I liked about, Kurt Vonnegut's writing. Like, you know, Slaughterhouse-Five.
Of course.
You know, like the terrible things he saw when he was in World War II and after the bombing of Dresden, but like he kind of made a humor in that book.
Vonnegut is my god, man. That guy, Cat's Cradle, Breakfast of Champions. Breakfast of Champions more so than any of the others. And same with God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater. You ever read that?
Mm-mm.
It's about this guy who, like, inherits all this money, and he just doesn't do what his family wants him to do, and he's just so against the norm, and it's phenomenal. I recommend you check it out.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you write stories, I guess, but, like, not, like, but in a poetry form, I
absolutely,
guess.
Yeah. That's my thing, man. Like, I'll write a story, but it's contained within, like, 9 lines or 18 lines of poetry, and I don't believe in lyrical, I don't believe in rhyming anymore. If a rhyme happens, it's an accident, but, yeah, like, transcendentalism, like, that stuff's cool, but I just, the closest guy I can relate to, and I'm sure I'll get knocked for it, is Bukowski. Charles Bukowski fucking, Chris Flynn gave me a book, and it just rocked my world.
Well, I love his one thing about, so you want to be a writer.
Yeah.
It's like unless it comes out of you naturally, you know, don't force it.
Exactly. Don't try. Yeah. That's somebody asked him, and he said, don't try. And it's funny because my friend Ryan Tompkins, I often will send him poems and he won't read them. And it's just this thing that we have. And I was in a dry spell recently and he said, don't force it. Just let it incubate. And I wrote a poem after that about that, and it fucking brought me out of that. So it was cool, you know.
And were you surprised at what parts went over well and what didn't, like when you read it, or was there certain things that got reactions you didn't expect? Or?
Yeah, I briefly mentioned before. I have this poem called "Multipurpose Room," and like I said, it's about this guy I worked with who watched this other guy we worked with together hang himself with a bed sheet in the ER. And it was in the same room that I used to sleep in on, like, double shifts and shit like that. So, you know, I end it, it's a humorous poem, but it's such a dark theme, and people don't know what to do with that. So this chick who books me every once in a while in Somerville, she really loves the poem. She's probably the biggest supporter of anything I do. But a lot of other people are like, whoa, man, that's taboo. Like, you shouldn't talk about stuff like that. Like, suicide's not funny. And I, you know, it's not. But at the same time, like, you got to find humor in some stuff, you know? Kind of dark, sardonic humor.
Yeah. I guess it kind of gives, like, it's a way, I guess, to make sense of life, maybe.
Absolutely. Because I think if a person walks around and they take every little thing so seriously, they're not going to see the enjoyment in life whatsoever. That's just my philosophy, you know.
And this, so you have this book coming out, right?
Yeah. I have this actual book coming out called Orphan Road. And it's 50 poems. I think it's 86 pages. It's 100 copies. It's a perfect binding book. And it's coming out on Uncollected Press, and it's definitely the stepping stone towards the direction I want to go in, you know. It's different in the sense because I've released or had published 6 chapbooks, which are kind of like mini books. They're staple bound, and each contained about 18 to 28 poems. So for me to do this book that has 50 poems in it, it's like the next step towards, like, a new market, so to speak. Like, it's an actual book. It has, like, my name written on the binding. It's fucking overwhelming. It's wild. And it looks good, man. It looks really good. My buddy Hank is putting it out, Uncollected Press. Yeah.
Hey, so what's that been like? Like, I guess getting it together and, like, trying to get it published?
It's a lot of anxiety on my end. And it shouldn't be, but it is, because it's like a record, you know, like, you're in music, you know, so in all the bands I was ever in, we set out to record a piece of music, whether it be an LP, a CD, a tape. So with the poems, because I was writing so much and so frequently, I became completely just ridden with anxiety because of, I'd see the number and I'm like, holy shit, I have 175 poems. This guy wants 50 poems. it's hard whittling it down. But when I finally did and I like read through it, I was like, wow, like, okay, this is a good collection, you know? It's a good representation of the things I write.
So sometimes you have to like see it all together, I guess.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so do you find it helpful to like plan out your spoken word acts, like write out like what you're going to say and rehearse it? And
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes what I'll do is, like, for example, like with this book, I will take 5 to 10 of the poems and I'll read them at a reading or an open mic. With the other books, what I would do is I would take like bits and pieces of each chapbook and then read those. And, you know, I would carry the books with me and I'd sell a good chunk. Like most of my stuff sells out and I'm not bragging. It's just something that's so wild to me. Like, I don't know, man. It's just, it's literature, you know, it's not music, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I did an open mic, like a spoken word thing, like a couple of, earlier this year, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, like I mapped out the whole thing and like recorded it at a time and like chose three. Two of them were lyrics I wrote.
Okay.
I read them as spoken word. And another one was like one I had and one I just wrote like as a poem.
Sure.
Kind of thing. Yeah. And yeah, it was it was neat like doing it that way, kind of like mapping it out. And then like, mm-hmm. I don't know, it was interesting like how people react, like certain things would resonate.
So, and that is awesome. Let me ask you something. Sorry to cut you off. Do you mind if I ask you a question?
No, that's fine. Okay. It's BSing. It's
all right. Job. All right. Cool. Cool. So like when you say you map it out, did you record yourself
mm-hmm.
like actually reciting the pieces?
Yeah.
You went back and listened and was like, ah, this third one doesn't really cut the mustard, so to speak. Let's
yeah.
fucking.
And like, okay. And like a lot of like cutting out, okay, I didn't really need that sentence in there, that just was redundant or that. Or I didn't need to really explain that. That kind of just spoke for...
It spoke for itself.
Yeah.
Cool. That is what I'll do, too. Like, I'll actually... A lot of times I'll sit on break from the psych hospital I work in, and I'll read through... I, like, print these, like, faux manuscripts so I can, like, actually read my poems and edit them as necessary. And when it comes time to do a reading, I'll print out a set list of poems, and I'll read through them, and I'll record myself. And if there's something that just isn't clicking right, like if I can't read it right, then I'll skip it. Like, I know it's written right, but sometimes reading something after you write it is just totally... It's like a lost continent, you know? It's just gone, you know?
Is it like maybe something in there that didn't need to be said for people to get the whole message, and it's just kind of like extra words, maybe?
Sometimes it could be extra words. I get hung up on tenses a lot, like past, present, future tenses. You want another beer, man?
Sure.
Yeah, kill it, dude. Yeah, yeah, of course. So, like, I don't come from a background of literature. Like, I'm not well-educated in writing poetry, in writing at all. You know, I come from a background of social work, psychology, so less is best in that sense, which I think also has shaped the writing a little bit.
Hmm. So would your writing be described, I guess, as prose? Kinda?
So I actually had to have a friend explain to me the difference between prose and poetry, and he described my writing as free-form poetry. Rebel without a cause. You know, it's just, I don't follow any rules. I write what I want. I have weird spacing. I have commas all over the fucking place. And I guess one might call it poetry, but I just call it writing.
Hmm. So it's just like something in you that you need to get out. Like.
Absolutely, because if I don't, then I will be subjected to my own madness.
Hey, so, like, what's the next plan for this? Like, you're doing the book, or, like, mm-hmm. do you have, like, performances planned? Or?
There's some performances planned. I was actually supposed to go to the UK for about 5 days and do 3 readings, but it fell through. My friends over there, we just couldn't get it together. We couldn't align it. So, I have some friends in Texas, some friends in Ohio and Missouri, and I might do kind of like a one-off tour just driving down there myself and reading and seeing where it goes. Because, you know, like I said earlier, it's easier to be a one-man army than it is like a four-person band, you know? It's just relying on me. It's got to be my drive, my determination to do it. Of course, things need to align. Like, I'm not just going to drive to Texas and hope for the best. Like, for me personally, I would need something set up, you know? Like,
you would have to have, like, a contact there, someone who's familiar with your work?
Maybe? Yeah, yeah, like somebody, yeah. And there's a lot. There's a lot of people out there. It's just a matter of having it work out with my schedule, with work, my family, and everything else like that.
And how much is social media, like, helpful?
Instagram is the best tool I've used. Facebook, I've met a ton of authors on. Authors, poets, writers, stand-up performers, comedians, scribes, I don't know what you want to call them, but Facebook has helped in a bizarre kind of way, but Instagram is the platform that really boosted me into this realm. There's a lot of presses all over the world who are calling for submissions, and I fucking see them and I submit to them. Even if my work doesn't meet their criteria, I still submit to them because it's like, well, now they know my name. Maybe the next round, you know?
Hmm. And then, like, posting, do you post, like, your writing on Instagram ever? Or?
You know, I don't, and I probably should. Sometimes I post things, like, I'll post, like, one poem out of one chapbook or two poems out of the next, but I'm really. I don't want to say, like, I'm one of those people who fears people stealing my work. Like, go ahead, steal it. You know, you're just a shithead in my head. If you steal it, you're just a shithead. But, like, for me, it's like, I want people to associate beyond the writing. I want people to associate, like, hey, here's Tom. He's got two kids. He works a job. And he writes as well. Not just, here's Tom and he's a writer. You know, like, there's more to writing than just the actual blots of ink on paper.
So, like, that's what, so you're saying, like, you like to keep your, like, you like to have your personal Instagram and your writing Instagram the same, so it, like, kind of shows who you are.
Of course, one so Instagram, yeah. yep. And there's no bullshit, man. The things I post on Instagram, it could be a picture of a flower, a picture of a cat,
my kids. You written about, like, having a kid and that stuff?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, absolutely.
You became a father not too long ago, right?
Five years ago. So, father twice, dude. So, my son will be 5 in August, and my daughter is 2.5 at this point. And I definitely write about them, and I swore I wouldn't. But it goes along with the thing of don't force it. Like, if it's going to flow, it's going to flow. So I just have these poems, like, about them. Like, them seeing caterpillars and playing with fucking ants on hardwood floors, and it just, I'm not gonna stop myself from writing something. Like, if it's coming out, it's coming out, but I won't force myself to write something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so it has to, it's more intuitive, I guess.
Like, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
And do you think you'll ever go back to music, or do you think that this,
you know, it's tough to say, man, because being involved in music, that is my undying passion. Like, I love fronting a band. Just, I use the word violence because every band I've been in, I think, has been violent for us as musicians. Not for crowd, like, the crowd killing one another, but I mean, like, we used to play music as fast as we fucking could. I used to sing as loud and as fast as I could and as harsh as I could. And it was an outlet to express all the frustration from the world. So I'm sort of finding that in poetry. Like, I'm still kind of navigating it. Like I said, I've written over, at this point, probably 300 goddamn poems in less than 2 years, and it's like, I'm finally climbing over that hill, and I'm hitting the point where I'm like, okay, maybe I don't need a band, but I'm not going to write it off. I would love to be in another band, yeah, but it would have to involve Chris Flynn, because that's just the way it goes, you know?
Oh, yeah. You've been making music together since, like, high school, right? So, yeah.
Since I was 16, and I'm 30 now. So, 14 years, yeah. And Permanent Tension isn't dead. I just can't get a straight answer from anybody. I guess we're on the Fugazi hiatus, you know?
Yeah. So I guess this is, like, the one thing you can do that's consistent, like, no matter what anybody else is doing, like, keep doing it, yeah.
Absolutely.
So, I guess, what's your ultimate dream of, like, where you want to be with this?
With poetry?
Mm-hmm.
Is that still recording?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry. And you edited this?
Yeah, it's all edited.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is all right.
Cool. My ultimate dream with poetry, I guess, would just be to continue to have an outlet to write. You know, people are really turned off with poetry, like us, like poets, for example. I'm not calling myself a poet, but as a writer, when I hit those dry spells, sometimes I think and I'm like, man, what the fuck is this for? Like, why am I torturing myself for the next poem? But for me, my ultimate achievement would just be to continue to have work published. Like, I've been published multiple times in the UK, in Greece, in America, very rarely, but the other countries, I'm published a lot, and that would be my, like, ultimate goal, I guess, to go over there, maybe do a reading here and there, meet the people who are actually publishing my work, and spend some time with them, you know, maybe drink a beer, smoke a joint, I don't know, do something with them on a meaningful level, and just be able to thank them for that, you know?
Yeah, and I guess, like, see more, like, what's going on there. Right. Have you seen, like, what's going on poetry-wise in Europe, or is that, like, something you get to explore?
Europe, I can relate to UK writers very well. I cannot relate to American writers at all, honestly. My buddy Chris Flakis down in Texas, and then Victoria Anderson over in Seattle, those are the two poets off the top of my head who I can relate to very well. In the UK, this guy, John Robinson, Gwill, James Thomas, Martin Appleby, Mark Brusecki, who's a South African fucking punk madman who runs Analog Submission Press. Like, I relate to those guys big time. But I don't know what it is about American writers I just can't find relation to. And a lot of the UK writers, it's very similar work. It's just, they see the mundane. They see the beauty in a dying flower under a haze of booze. Like, there's just something beautiful about what they see.
Do you think America maybe is more ego-driven? Because I feel like maybe our society is, like, a little more ego-driven. Maybe that plays into the way people write poetry.
I think so. I think there's a lot of Bukowski worship in America for the wrong reasons. You know, people worshiping the toxic, I don't even like that I'm going to say this, but the toxic masculinity poems. But if you look through his work, there's such beauty in his writing, and it's so overlooked by the sex and the booze poems. And if you remove those, you have one of the greatest writers of all time, you know?
Yeah, like his poems about, like the way the world was and everything.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Same with this guy Bob Kaufman, this black beat poet. He did his own thing, and he's just from a fucking different dimension. You know, a lot of people compare him to Ginsberg, and I think Kaufman smokes Ginsberg. Like, Ginsberg can't even hold a fucking match to Bob Kaufman. You know, that's just my opinion, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually think that Kerouac seemed like more of an asshole than Bukowski, to be totally honest.
I agree, man. I honestly agree. I've never fucking been able to get through any Kerouac.
Yeah, the only thing I like about his writing is like being able to, like, take you, like, different, like, the traveling, you know, different
No, dude, I agree. I mean, that guy fucking traveled. He saw things that most of us probably will never see. But at the same time, I think his writing is just, like, this insane, manic, rambling, amphetamine-induced
fucking... Yeah, I think he just wrote it on, like, one large sheet of toilet paper.
Yes, yeah. It's not for me, and I'm happy that somehow people find relation to it. You know, because people say the same thing about Dylan Thomas. You know Dylan Thomas?
I'm not too familiar with him, no.
He wrote this poem, "Do Not Go Gently Into..." We'll edit that out. Dylan Thomas is this Welsh poet who drank himself to death, essentially in New York City, at the White Horse Tavern, and it's a lot of lyrical, it's a lot of rhymers, but man, that guy fucking knew how to write. And a lot of people just knock him because of the time frame that he was in, but it's like, he was the real deal. You know, I don't think there was any bullshit in his writing. Kerouac, it's just nonstop rambling.
Yeah, you know? And he was just such a douchebag. Like,
He's definitely a douchebag. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, man, I agree.
Yeah, like, Bukowski was like, kind of like a, I don't know. He was like a lovable asshole in a way. I don't know how to say it.
Because
he was just so, I don't know, he was such a character, I guess that's what it is.
I think I'm no historian, but I think like with Bukowski there was a certain honesty. It was just, this is who I am, this is what I do, if you don't like it, then fuck off. You know, and I really respect people who operate like that. Like, I mean... That's just me. I respect his writing a lot. Even the sex-crazed and fucking booze-drinking poems, but again, there's like a real beauty in his early poems, and even later poems that don't involve women and booze, you know?
Yeah, and then his books were entertaining. Like, we had that alter ego, Chinaski.
Chinaski!
I read Hollywood Post Office, I liked a lot, like, where he kept getting complaints from the guy at work, and then, like, he just threw every complaint in the garbage.
Yeah, and you know what, like to an extent, who doesn't relate with that? Like, when I worked at CVS, I constantly got written up, and I would just fucking toss it in the garbage, because it's like, come on, man, it's CVS.
Like, yeah, like, who cares like this, about this job?
Yeah, this isn't my end-all be-all. I don't know what my end-all be-all is, but I don't give a shit that you wrote me up for being fucking 15 minutes, like, really? 15 minutes late, man? Like, be happy I showed up, you know? Yeah. it's funny. Post Office I liked. I just finished Ham on Rye.
Oh, that one I haven't read, no.
It fucking blew me away. It was totally miserable and just... And honest. And you know, even if it's, like, flavored with, fallacies or whatever, it's still great, man. It's still great. So, yeah.
Nice. Do you think you'll ever write, like, a novel, or do you think, like, a book of poetry is the most...
A lot of people have been asking me to write something, some sort of story or multiple stories on psychiatric encounters, but there's such a level of dangerousness for myself in that because, you know, HIPAA and violation of privacy... Obviously, I would change names, and when I write about patients or experiences in the hospital, I do change the names, and I do alter the situations a bit, but mostly it's honest and true, you know? To write a novel, though, it just seems like a lot of work. You know, I'm much happier just writing...
Like creating a story and everything?
Yeah. I mean, it's not something I've completely said no to. I've tossed around the idea. I have a few ideas, but... I don't know. Maybe it's a time and place thing, you know? Like, maybe in, like, 10 years I'll do something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, a lot of novelists, like, wrote, like, their novels, like, later in life, so...
And that's the thing, too, man. Like, I don't want to rush into things. Like, when I first started the poetry writing, I believed that the more output that you had meant... that you were doing something right. Didn't mean that you were good, but it meant that you were doing something right. And I've learned that, you know, that's not the case. Like, maybe you got to give people something to salivate over a little bit, you know? So I've definitely pulled back. I have this book. It's out now. It'll be fully out by this weekend. July 28th, I should say that, because...
This will probably be out after that, but okay. The book is out now.
So the book is out now, and after this book comes out, I have a chapbook in England coming out called "Even the Spiders Are Despondent," and another one called "No Place to Be," which will be out sometime in the fall. And then after that, I'm going to take a little break and just do the touring, maybe, and more readings, and just try to get this fucking book out there.
Nice, and I guess what advice would you give to, like, other aspiring writers?
The advice I would give would be having a book in Barnes and Noble, doesn't mean shit. You know, it doesn't mean a fucking goddamn thing. And you need to submit your work, and you need to accept the rejections. And that is where you will find your footing in this field, so to speak.
Like having the confidence to be rejected and...
Absolutely. I calculated... The other day, I had calculated... I have 35 acceptances and over 312 submissions and 200, like, I think it was 73 declines. Like, I was rejected 273 times. So, like, when you do the math, it's like, wow, man, what is this guy doing? Like, why is he even pushing forward? And it's because I enjoy doing it. I'm not doing it for anybody but myself. And that's the truth.
I guess that's like the key. You can't like look for like a validation with it. Yeah,
absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And you know what? I learned that from Chris Flynn, and I learned that from being in punk bands and hardcore bands over the years. If you don't do it for yourself, and you're trying to do it for somebody else, you've already failed. That's my everything. That's my core, you know.
All right, and I guess any final thoughts or things you'd like to say before we wrap up?
Whew. Put me on the spot, man. I don't know. I think I'm a little inebriated to answer that question, man. Do you have any questions for me outside of the realm of poetry or outside of anything?
I mean, I think we covered...
I think we did.
Yeah.
Cool. How's music for you?
Good. I mean, I was trying to get, like, a band together for a while, but now I'm just, like, trying to, like, record an EP and...
Cool. Like on your own.
Yeah. With, like, cool. Drum machine and stuff. It's hard getting the drum machine going, but I have, like, a couple of songs written.
Cool.
And I want to add, like, synth parts and stuff, but I really want to have, I don't know...
You want, like, a real band.
Yeah. That's the thing. Yeah. Because, like, I have these songs, and, like, I've been trying... You know, I had one drummer for a while, but then he was busy with another project, and then I got these other two guys that were going to do it, but then, you know, they flaked on it. So, you know, it's just hard getting together people for that, so...
Absolutely.
I'm just doing, like, the podcast, and, you know, occasionally, like, I'll write stuff, and, like, the acting.
The podcasts are fucking awesome, dude.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Hey, let me ask you something. I know we're still recording. Do you want me to read any poems from the book?
Sure.
You sure?
Yeah, would that be weird? Yeah, I mean, usually, like, the episodes are, like, 45 minutes. I haven't done that in a while with, like, a poet. Yes.
Yeah?
I used to always do that, like, have him read a poem, yeah.
All right, let me see. If I had a copy of the book that I could give you, this is, like, a test print, I would give it to you. So let me get them first, all right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Orphan Road, dude. Yeah, do your thing, man, do your thing. All right. She was no Athena. I once had a girlfriend, and the only thing she sucked dry was the life I had in me, and the love I felt for her. One day she left me, and everyone rejoiced. You're better off, they said. I felt like shit. Ryan handed me a 40-ounce bottle of Budweiser and said, this might help. And it did. Anyway... All right, you want me to keep going?
Yeah, sure.
All right. I probably got, like, two more. Man, I read about Ryan a lot. My friend Ryan. I hadn't thought about poems in a week. I hadn't written many poems in many weeks. Ryan told... You know what? I'm going to fucking start that over. My friend Ryan. I hadn't thought about poems in a week. I hadn't written poems in many weeks. Ryan told me, don't force it, man. Let it incubate a while. Ryan has never read my poems. I consider him a scholar amongst most educated people. Ryan used to write deep stories, but one day he just stopped, and he's never been the same since. Got like two more, is that cool?
Yeah.
All right. Completely sober. The box reads, "Ants crawl in to eat, ants crawl in to die. Kill the ants, kill the colony." I read this out loud and began laughing to myself. In the aisle, other shoppers quickly move away. Some even abandon their shopping carts. When I reach the cashier, my eyes are bloodshot, and I keep on laughing. After I pay, I turn my head and see concerned faces staring in bewilderment. Little do they know, I was completely sober.
Yeah, that's, that sounds very Bukowski.
Yeah, like, thanks, man. Thanks. Yeah. I got two more.
So Ryan, like, that's...
That's Ryan Tompkins.
Ryan Tompkins, yeah,
from the Butter Boys.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody should check out the Butter Boys. Those are the funniest fucking guys I've ever met in my life.
I didn't know he wrote, too. Like, he wrote,
He used to write, like, these insane fucking scripts for movies and just stories that were so deep. Mm-hmm. And just characters with multi-dimensional levels of feeling, and he just stopped one day, man. And he just never has been the same since. And that's why I wrote a poem about him.
So, yeah, Ryan, get back to writing those scripts.
Yeah, you son of a bitch. all right. Two more. Tomorrow is recycling day. The faded clock on the microwave reads 11:52 p.m. 2 minutes ago, I finished off all the beer. I carry all the empties outside and toss them into the can. Tomorrow is recycling day. I lean against the house for support, unzip and take a piss. I look up towards the sky. Something about it makes me think of Massachusetts. I feel uneasy. I shift my gaze to the darkness of the woods. I finish my piss, pull up my zipper, and run inside. Too much of anything will kill a man. One more. An old poem rewritten for tomorrow. Under golden moonlight, we cleanse ourselves in the falling rain and feel it wash away all the wounded yesterdays, the nights of endless bleeding, the suicides of lovers, the homicides of lovers, and the absenteeism of lovers. And as tomorrow embraces the fall and decline, skin is stained black from inking rambling passages of broken prose and poetry while waiting just a little bit longer to drown in the afterbirth from kissing the bottle. That's all I got for you, dude.
Nice.
Yeah, man. Thanks, man.
So check out his book.
Yeah, check out my book, man.
Yeah. I want to get back to, like, writing more.
You
shit.
Should.
Yeah. I think you've seen some of the stuff I've written, like, well, I post on Instagram.
So dude, I'm a big fan of you and your writing, and I really fucking hope that you assemble a band. It's tough, man. It's tough assembling a band. How old are you, can I ask?
30.
Okay, yeah, me too. When's your birthday?
May.
May what?
3rd.
Oh, congrats. Happy birthday.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah. So,
Chris Flynn was here, and also my friend Sierra, she came. I've been meaning to interview her, too. She's like an artist. And
as you should.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that... All right. What I really like about your podcast is that you've interviewed so many people over so many facets of art. You know, you got the guy from Crass.
Mm-hmm.
You've had actors and actresses. You've had, I think, a stand-up comedian come.
Yeah, a couple.
A couple. So it's, you're not like writing, or you're not interviewing exclusively. It's just, I think it's fucking cool, man. And I hope you don't stop doing this.
Yeah, I've been getting back into, there was, like, a little bit of a hiatus with March and that, but then it's, like, interesting. Like, I do one interview, and mm-hmm. then it's, like, then more people start contacting me, and then it just kind of, you get in the flow, it just keeps going.
Sometimes we need a break, man. Sometimes a break provides, a fresh lens on the situation, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell I'm talking about at this point. But anyway, any last questions for me, man, or?
No, I think we're good. I mean, I think we brought out all the layers of Mr. Tom Bukowski.
Thanks, man. You actually, you said my last name right, too.
Oh, why? What do people usually say?
Backless or Buckless.
Yeah, I get like Canise or,
I'll be honest, I called you Canise up until now. Let's close it out.
All right, let's close it out before it gets too long. All right, thank you for coming on, man.
No problem. Thank you, dude. Thank you very much.
All right, so that was the episode, and I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you enjoyed listening to his pieces of writing. And like I said, that conversation really inspired me, like talking about when I did the spoken word poem and just seeing like he had copies of his book that he published. And I've always enjoyed creative writing and, you know, expressing myself through writing and through music. I always liked writing lyrics for music too, and it made me think, you know, it got me to writing more too, because I already had some pieces I had written, but I also now I'm thinking about putting together some of that writing in a book. And I thought I'd end the episode reading a recent piece of writing I did, because I know that on this show I interview a lot of interesting and creative people, artists, musicians, and other people like that. But I also want to develop more of a rapport with my audience and let them get to know me as well. Because after all, this is, you know, there has to be a reason why you follow my show and listen to the guests being interviewed on my show as opposed to, you know, any other show that's interviewing people. So for this end of this episode, I'm going to read you this piece I wrote. It was actually, you know, I usually don't like write a lot of personal stuff or put a lot of personal stuff out there, but I felt like kind of just being very honest with this piece. This was kind of something that was inside me that I wanted to get out, that it relates to a lot of the things I do, and I hope, you know, some of you find it inspiring or insightful. It's called "I Enjoy the Ride." For the longest time, I was unable to sit still or pay attention in school. From kindergarten until high school, there wasn't a day that I wasn't thrown out of class at least once. I loved acting up and drawing negative attention to myself. For some reason, that was easier and more fun than actually learning to socialize or pay attention. No matter what, I just wasn't interested in what they taught. I viewed the whole thing as a joke. They put me in special ed classes. I knew I didn't belong there, but I didn't care. It was less work that way. The few years after I finished high school, I was a bit of a drift. I still didn't know what I wanted, and I still didn't care. Then one day, this energy woke inside of me. I started to crave knowledge and began teaching myself everything I could. It was play, not work. I enjoyed learning because I wanted to, not because I was forced to. I suddenly found this fire inside of me that drove me to create and communicate. That fire has never left, and it's still here till this day. I still can't define it. I don't know where it'll lead me, but it's been one hell of a ride so far, so I'm excited to see where it takes me. And, yeah, that was my piece I wrote. And I guess that fire that drives me, I guess that's why I do the podcast, because I just have this, desire to, you know, connect with people who are creators in one way or another, or, you know, to give people a voice. And, yeah, that's why I just keep doing a lot of the things I do, you know. The acting or writing music, because I just have this drive inside of me to keep going. And I don't know, I hope that was also an insight, like, into my journey of, you know, how I've changed over the years and how I've evolved into who I am today. And I hope you found that inspiring, and I hope you got something out of Tom's writing as well. He's a very good author. Be sure to check out his book, Orphan Road. And, yeah, be sure to look up his band, Permanent Tension, and also his early music with his band, Four Fingers. That's it for today's episode. I'll catch you on the next one.
BSing with.